So today's reading for the message comes from the translation of the message, and it is John, 21, 1 through 19, I think. Is that right? Somebody looking at it?
1 through 19.
There you go. And the reason we didn't finish up the chapter is because that's another sermon for another week. There's probably about four sermons packaged in this story, but we're just going to concentrate in one area. But anyway, here it is. After this, Jesus appeared again to the disciples, this time at Tiberias. This is the Sea of Galilee. And this is how he did it. Simon Peter, Thomas, nicknamed the twin, Nathanael from Cana in Galilee, and the brother Zebedee, and two other disciples were together. And Simon announced, "I'm going fishing." The rest of them replied, "We're going with you." And they went out and got into the boat. They caught nothing that night. And when the sun came up, Jesus was standing on the beach, but they didn't recognize him. And Jesus spoke to them, "Good morning. Did you catch anything for breakfast?" And they answered, "No." And he said, "Well, throw the net off the right side of the boat and see what happens." They did what he said, and all of a sudden there were so many fish in it, they weren't strong enough to pull it in. And then the disciples Jesus loved, the disciple that Jesus loved, i.e. John, said to Peter, "It's the Master." And when Simon Peter realized that it was the Master, he threw on some clothes, for he was stripped for work, and dove into the sea. The other disciples came in by boat, but they weren't far from land, 100 yards or so, and they were pulling along a full net of fish. And when they got out of the boat, they saw a fire had been laid with fish and bread cooking on it. And Jesus said, "Bring some of the fish you've just caught." And Simon Peter joined them and pulled the net to shore. 153 big fish. I'm going to stop here for a minute and tell you, for those of you who want to know the significance of that, I have no idea. And guess what? I don't care. And most of the scholars reading this and exegeting it don't care. Don't get hung up on 153 fish. It was a full net.
It was big.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Anyway, Jesus said, "Breakfast is ready." Not one of the disciples dare asked, "Who are you?" They knew it was the Master. And Jesus then took the bread and gave it to them. He did the same with the fish. This was how, now the third time, that Jesus had shown himself alive to the disciples since being raised from the dead. And after breakfast, and this is what I want you all to pay attention to now. After breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" "Yes, Master, you know I love you." And Jesus said, "Feed my lambs." And he asked the second time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" "Yes, Master, you know that I love you." And Jesus said, "Shepherd my sheep." And then he said a third time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" And Peter was upset. No kidding. That he had been asked a third time, "Do you love me?" And so he answered, "Master, you know everything there is to know. You've got to know that I love you." Jesus said, "Then feed my sheep. I am telling you the very truth now. When you were young, you dressed yourself and went wherever you wished. And when you get old, you'll have to stretch out your hands while someone else dresses you and takes you where you don't want to go." He said this as a hint to the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. And then he commanded, "Follow me." Woohoo! I love this story. And by the way, I'm going to give you a couple paragraphs. And God bless my mother, because she's probably going to rain on me or something, because she hated it when I read part of the exegetical thing, because she said, "You're a better preacher than you are a reader." I don't know what that meant. But anyway, Mom, I got some exegesis to read here this morning. And this is just to make sure that we get set up. Because you all know, I do not think that John is the gospel, right? I think it's what? A written apology for the divinity of Christ. So, everything that John does at that point is pointing in that direction, trying to make Jesus God. And, get this, scholarly consensus now regards this chapter that I just read from as an appendix to the gospel. Jesus' final post-resurrection appearance took place in Galilee, where several of the disciples had returned to fishing. And by the way, we need to talk about the significance of that, because they had given up. And I'll come back to that in a minute. They had given up. They were done. They were depressed. They were lost. And Peter, the emotional one of the group, said, "The hell with this, I'm going fishing." William Barclay, by the way, who's an excellent theologian, clarifies the multiple intent of this chapter to prove that, number one, Jesus had indeed been raised from the dead. Number two, to proclaim the universality of the church. And number three, to reestablish the leadership of Peter in the church. And then finally, to point to John as the last of the apostolic witnesses. And of course, if you heard the story, all those points are right in the story. That's why we call it an appendix. Yes, sir?
I was just wondering, from what's been discussed, wasn't he just trying to go back to what was familiar, what he knew?
Who, Peter?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we're going to talk about that right now. Amen. Right after I say hello to the dog. That is a beautiful dog. And he can't hear me because he's got headphones on. So, oh, well, maybe he can. Good morning. Good to see you. All right, so let's talk about this for a minute, the setup. Because it's perfect for us, folks. I mean, Billy and I just went through it. We just went through this. We got out to see my mom. And, you know, everybody had been on my case, if I could say that and be honest. You got to go. You got to go. She hasn't got much time. And she wants to see you. I mean, people here at my church were like, "You need to go now." Right? And somewhere along the line, I kind of, you know, I prayed about it. The plane tickets fell into place, and I was going to go when I was going to go. And so I got out there. And, yeah, she was weak. She was bedridden at that point, but she was cognizant, baby. She understood it. By the way, for those of you who think that I'm just kidding about my mother and how perfect she was and the way she appeared and all that, up until the moment she died, she was not going out of that house, she said, without her nails being done. And they were perfect. My sister sat there and did her nails. They were absolutely perfect. And if you don't believe me, I have a picture to prove it, and I'll show it to you if you ask. But anyway, my point is that we got out there, and for whatever reason, it wasn't Billy and I that she was waiting for. Well, in her mind, yes, but her body was not ready to go. And so we were there from Monday to the following Monday. And she didn't go. I had to say goodbye because I was leaving and knowing that she was going to go to heaven the other way. And then finally somebody said, "Well, you know what? Your mother has always been incredibly independent. And now she's having a small little argument with God. She's telling God she's ready and God is saying not yet." And so when Tuesday came, I'm 20 minutes from getting on the field to umpire. And what happens? My sister calls me and says, "Paul, I think it's time. Do you want to pray with her?" And I said, "Sure. Absolutely. Who's there?" And, you know, there was family members there and some friends were with her. I said, "Put the phone on speaker. Put it up to her ear so she can hear." And we did that final prayer. You know, that prayer of release. That prayer that says it's time to go home. Not giving permission, but literally praying that God receive her right now. And when I said amen, Lisa said she breathed one more time, it was gone. This is why this story's important. Because it never works out the way we want it to work out. Jesus' ministry did not work out the way the disciples had anticipated. They anticipated the fall of Rome. They anticipated a whole new form of Judaism. And yet, they killed him. And then you got the women. God, you got the women saying that he's alive. I don't think so. We saw him on the cross. We heard the screams of pain. And then you got some other appearance someplace. And Peter, who was like the worst of the bunch, because why? He was afraid to express his faith. And so when he got confronted with it, what did he do? He said, no, I have no idea what the hell you people are talking about. Never knew the man. Never was with him. You're mistaken. And of course, that was what Jesus told him he was going to do. It's also what Jesus tells us that we're going to do on occasion. Hurts, doesn't it? Because we don't want to think like that. We want to think that we are these perfect Christians. Perfect people of faith. And it gets us into trouble because when we're not the perfect people of faith, James, we have a tendency to walk away. Because we're not good enough.
No, it's still going.
Okay.
I turned Wi-Fi off. I'm not sure what happened.
All right. Well, anyway, on the shore, they got this dude saying, good morning. And if your fishing is really bad, why don't you take the net and put it on the other side? And so they do that. And all of a sudden, they got more fish. All right. We're stopping me.
Mostly, can you hear us now? It's back. We lost audio.
We lost audio.
Oh. Well, maybe you weren't supposed to hear that part of the sermon. I don't know. Anyway, he says good morning, tells them to drop their nets on the other side, and all of a sudden, and by the way, this is a replay, is it not, from when he called the disciples originally, and they got their nets filled, and they get filled up, and they come up with this number of 153. There is probably some significance to it, but none of us, we're there, and we don't know. Don't even take a guess.
Well, they're talking about them being large fish, and the net still didn't break.
Here's the only significance. Well, okay, the net didn't break. It said that in the thing. Here's the significance of a full net. It means, if you want symbols, is that the church is for everyone. That there's enough room for everyone. There is no one that can be left out. And is it any surprise? Have you ever gone to the mall, folks, and you're walking through the mall, you're doing your shopping, and then James Peake comes up to you days later and goes, you know, I waved to you. You didn't say a word to me. Nobody ever sees me. Nobody ever pays attention to me. Are you feeling guilty yet there? Was that good? I've been out of town for a week and a half. Anyway, the point being, the reason that they didn't know Jesus was they made the same mistake that we make with our faith. Point number one. Took a long time to get there, but point number one. They weren't looking for him. They weren't looking for him. He was gone. And they were moving on. And Jesus has a point for us in today's world. He's always there. You just got to look. Which brings me to the second point, and that is the whole, you know, everybody makes a big deal out of this about the reinstatement of Peter. And, you know, the symbol by John, the author of this, is really great, right? Because, you know, you got a fire going, right? Food's being passed around. Where was Peter when he denied Jesus before? He was around a fire. Food was being given. And now he's being asked that same question again. Do any of you think that it's a little strange that he reacted so strongly? Because it was what? Not even 3-4 days. Before that, he's like, I don't know who the hell you are. And now Jesus shows up and to his face says, hey, do you love me? And Peter's immediate, well, yeah, I can see you. Oh, wait. That's the second point. We do better when we can see Jesus. Amen. So Jesus says, since we can see him at this point, do you love me? And we immediately want to say yes. And what does Jesus say? Feed my sheep. What's the translation of feed my sheep? I was
hungry
and you fed me. I was thirsty. Thank you, Billy. And you gave me drink. And so Jesus says a second time to make sure that we're on the right track, do you love me? And of course, Peter says, you know I do.
I just said it. Come on.
Oh, wait a minute. That first time was take care of my lambs.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, take care of my lambs. What's taking care of my lambs? That's the kids, folks, that's around us. The youngins. Anybody that would harm a youngin. Amen.
You weren't supposed to keep him from Jesus.
Amen. That second time, it's feed my sheep. And then he says a third time. And don't we, when we're looking at Jesus, we're not honest. If we're honest, we don't want to hear Jesus say to us a third time, do you love me? Because we all want to have that same attitude. Of course I love you. I go to church. I go to Bible study. I read the Bible. I've memorized the Bible. I recite all the creeds and credos. What about so-and-so? Oh, I ain't forgiven them. You know what they did to me? Do you know what they did to Jesus? You see, we need to be reminded, folks, that what the resurrection is all about is, number one, look for Jesus. Number two, when you look, you will see Jesus. And then, listen, do you love me? And when your answer is yes, you will care for those around you, you will embrace the outcast, and more importantly, you'll not judge anyone for who they are. There is no better message of the resurrection than Jesus standing on that seashore that day and saying to them, good morning. Are you ready for breakfast? Are you ready to love your neighbor? God bless you.